This is audiobook of work of more than 130 years ago, but timeless, life and labor in the spirit world, by author, Mary T. Longley. Original publication, United States, Colby and Rich, 1885. Content last in this book. Preface. When the thought of publishing this volume was first suggested to me by my spirit guides, I was led to ask, what good will it accomplish? And they replied, it will teach mortals that which it is impossible for them to obtain from any other source, but of which they are supremely desirous of being informed, are the conditions and surroundings, and the pleasures and pursuits of and influence exerted upon the denizens of earth by the inhabitants of the spirit world. It will reveal somewhat of the life their departed relatives and friends live, and to which they themselves are rapidly approaching. It will show that that life is a tangible reality, that it is, in fact, the substance, this being but the shadow, of the eternal, while this is but transitory, that while the joys they may the possess surpass all human power of conception, they are attained only by purity of thought, and a faithful performance of duty, and that every advance made in those essentials in this life places them in a correspondingly advanced state when they enter the spiritual realm. I had no desire to further question. The accomplishment of such a work seemed every way desirable. I cheerfully acceded to their wishes, and the result is here presented. I believe that all herein given has emanated from the minds of spiritual intelligences, that even the words employed have been chosen by them as most befitting the thoughts they wished to express. They have come to me in times of quiet seclusion, when there was nothing to disturb the harmony absolutely required for the transmission of the truths they wished to convey. M. T. Shalimar. Life and Labor in the Spirit World. Part 1. Chapter 1. Spirit Violet. Katie Imadan Kinsey, the beautiful spirit to whom we are indebted for the larger part of the contents of this book, was the second daughter of Joseph and Anne Frances Kinsey, of Cincinnati, Ohio. Born in that city October 7, 1856, the subject of this sketch lived in the home of her parents save when she was away at school until her 21st year, when, in the July of 1877, while making a visit at the home of an uncle in Milton, Indiana, she was suddenly summoned to enter the spirit world after an illness of only a few days. The character and disposition of Miss Kinsey were of the most exemplary and lovely nature. Of her it could be truly said, none knew thee but to love thee, nor named thee but to praise. Hers was no common life, imbued with an earnest and deep sympathy for humanity, and ever desirous of doing good. Her days were spent in thoughtful care for others, and in seeking to give practical expression to the Golden Rule. In a memorial address framed by the officers of the Sabbath School, at which Katie was a regular attendant, and presented to her parents as a token of the rare appreciation in which she was held by all, are to be found the following commendatory words of her earthly life. Her heart was open, frank, and transparent. We all recognized the loveliness and beauty of her character and life, and they have left an impression not easily removed. She has always been the same sweet, gentle spirit, no expression which was not fitting to be made anywhere, no harsh word or unkind look marred her beautiful life, always ready to discharge cheerfully any duty assigned to her, and always well. As a scholar she seemed to absorb all that was taught, and to drink in the great truth of redeeming love. Her long connection with our school, and her interest in everything that would promote its welfare, we record as worthy of all imitation. For some time before her physical decease Miss Kinsey displayed a taste for literary pursuits, which was very gratifying to her friends, as well as pleasing to herself. For a number of months previous to her last illness, she had filled the position of editress of a lively little paper called The Spectator, published by the Friends Lyceum, an organization of which she was a member, and it is needless to remark that she managed the sheet with becoming skill, ability, and discretion. Widely was the death of their beloved president and editress deplored by the various members of the society, and a set of resolutions, expressing grief at their loss, and the esteem in which she was held by the organization, was framed and adopted at its first meeting following her decease. Notices of the death of Miss Kinsey appeared in the Cincinnati papers, and bore expression to the universal love and respect in which she was held, while letters of condolence were forwarded to her parents from all quarters. Shortly after the decease of their daughter, Mr. and Mrs. Kinsey collected the memorial addresses, resolutions, letters of sympathy, newspaper articles, etc., on her death, and in connection with the literary productions of their ascended child, published them in an elegantly bound volume, copies of which were presented to the numerous friends who had known and loved her. This memorial volume bears the following inscription upon its title page. Thus, far beyond all noise of earthly strife, or silent death, rest 'neath their long, green sod, thou art gone triumphant into perfect life, the soul's true life in God. The articles that follow, from the pen of Miss Kinsey, will indicate to the reader her mental ability, and the liberal opinions entertained by her. They were written while filling the position of editress of the Spectator, and published in its columns on the date's specified day. Sympathy. Of all the gifts given to man, the power to sympathize is the most godlike, and the man who has it not knows not what life is, when he reaches his journey's end on this side. Having been supremely selfish all the way, he will discover that what he called life was but a living death after all. Love and sympathy seem nearly synonymous, but the former can be selfish, while the very essence of the latter is thought for others. Genius is but an intense power to sympathize, coupled with ability to express the same. In fact, this one word makes a part of so many good things that to enjoy life at all we must sympathize with nature, man, or God. A sympathy with nature is the source of marvelous comfort. Shakespeare understood it when he said, "Ay, and this our life, exempt from public haunt, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stones, and good in everything." There are times when life grown burdensome hangs like a leaden weight upon our necks, we would get away from ourselves, and it is necessary to use all our power to crush the wish that we had never been born. Then if we can go into the fields or woods, and, throwing ourselves upon the ground, rest our heads on the loving earth, how soon we find relief. The quiet breeze is like a friendly hand upon our brows, the voice of the brook, the song of birds, and hum of insects are like balm upon a wound. We are children in our mother's arms, and the grand old trees are our brothers and sisters. Whatever human friends may leave or disappoint us, we have always sweet sympathizers in the flowers, trees, brooks, rocks, grass, and everything which springs to life in the fields or woods, on the mountains or in the valleys. A sympathy with our fellow beings is higher than that with nature, because more active and requiring forbearance. A put yourself in his place is a world of meaning. We should strive that ours may be the finger which shall touch the secret spring in our neighbor's heart, which shall unlock the good lying dormant there for want of help to bring it out. Strive to realize their griefs and temptations. If we could for one short hour put ourselves in the place of someone whom we now condemn with so much bitterness, if we could see how circumstances have wrapped their fatal web around him, how much the fatal tendency to do evil is the terrible legacy of his parents, how often would harsh judgment lie low in the dust, and loving mercy cover with her shielding mantle. If we could throw off this crust of ice, with which so many of us seem to have encased ourselves, how much more good we could do. Now, we stand apart, then, joined together, each helping the other, we would fulfill the purpose of our being. Sympathy with God. Is it blasphemous for weak mortals to think of such a thing? No. The loving Father alone is acquainted with us, and is therefore the only thorough sympathizer we have. A. He knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are dust. We commence to be in harmony with God just as soon as by cultivating sympathy for man, we become fellow workers with him. March 2, 1877. Girls. Girls are queer creatures, but we cannot help liking them. Under all the silliness and vanity there is a vein of gold in everyone which is undoubtedly genuine. It comes to the surface sometimes, but is often so deeply embedded in nonsense that a superficial observer would not have the slightest suspicion of its existence. Part of this want of sense is natural, but a great deal of it is acquired in a negative way. The majority of girls have very little object in life, and cannot see the use of accumulating material which they never expect to use. To be sure, they all intend to be married some time, but, judging from the specimens of male suitors, they see that which requires but very little effort and less sense. So, when Papa and Mama, after a great deal of consultation, decide upon a good school, their daughter goes there, but she could hardly tell you why. If she has no positive love for study, her chief end and aim, while in school, will be to shuffle off the lessons for the day with the utmost dispatch, and atheism an end. When school days are over, she expects to have nothing more to do with the subjects they considered, excepting a little reading, writing, spelling, and arithmetic. She is to enter society, which to hundreds means spending the days with a little housework, making a good many calls, and doing some shopping. The evenings are devoted to dancing or talking with vapid-brained young men, who never had an idea in their lives, and consider it an insult if a lady ventures one. Or worse than this, perhaps they must talk with young men whom they know have sense, but will not condescend to use it in their presence. After a while the girl is expected to marry one of these individuals. They do very well for a partner in a cotillion, but how about life? Let us see what she has to say about it. Talking to a confidential friend, A.O., yes, it is decided that Mr. B. and I are to be made one. I can say I love him devotedly, and really think him decidedly stupid sometimes, but I suppose it is all for the best, for you see I cannot do a single thing, and if Papa should be taken away or lose his health, having nothing to depend upon but his salary now, what would become of us then? As it is, Mr. B. is rich, and I can give a nice, comfortable home to both Mama and Papa at any time after we are married. What silly and romantic ideas we had about marriage when we went to school. How soon they vanish in real life. Here we have to take the best we can get and be thankful for it. We believe the above to be a fair sample of hundreds of the marriages made at the present day. The man wants a housekeeper, the woman a home. Each gets what he or she bargained for, and so much more that it is not strange the daily papers are full of accounts of divorce suits. Let the girls, as well as the boys, be educated to do something whereby they can make an honorable living, and we believe a great deal of unhappiness will be prevented. It seems to us but justice to allow women to do whatsoever their hands find to do with their might, whether it be dressmaking, cooking, washing and dining, or practicing law and medicine. It also seems no more than right that she should have a voice in the affairs of the country under whose laws she lives and educates her children. The sterner sex need have no fears that when woman has the ballot she will usurp their privilege of smoking, swearing, wearing the hair short, fighting at the polls, and other such delicacies. Neither will she monopolize the stump at election times, and harangue the people, calling everyone who disagrees with her names that decent people would blush to address to a dog. Some people pretend to fear that when women vote they will have no time for domestic affairs, and that the institution of home itself will be destroyed. Heartrending pictures are drawn of paterfamilias, seated by the deserted hearthstone, vainly endeavoring to quiet a weeping infant, while its mother has gone to the apolsies. As the old woman said, we feel for that man, but we can't find him, neither can we find the mother who would entrust her infant to such doubtful care. From the fuss made about the time taken from domestic duties, one would think it took a week to put a small slip of paper into a medium-sized box. Why, we have known of men who could put in half a dozen in less than half that time, and no one suspects women to be less clever than men. As for home, who made the home in the first place? Woman, of course, and she loves it as she loves her life. Here the golden vein in her nature will come to the surface and sparkle resplendently. Will her home be any the less sweet when she feels that she can indeed be a helpmeet to her husband if disaster overtake him in business? Will her children be less dear because she has the consciousness that she can protect and care for them if the head of the house be taken away? Will she love her husband less, knowing that she married him to have a loving companion, and not simply a person to support her. A woman naturally wishes to respect and look up to her husband. Therefore, we have decided that society, when it is perfected, should be looked upon as a flight of stairs, a conceding to man the position on the highest step, if you please. But there is a woman on the one just below, and the steps are not very high. In this way they alternate until we reach the lowest step. And what find we there? A disconsolate old bachelor, with disheveled hair, croaking a tune, the burden of which is that women have no business to vote. May 18, 1877. The following little gem, published by Ms. Kinsey in The Spectator early in 1877, is here reproduced at the earnest solicitations of many friends E.O.L.D.H. It is a melancholy fact that the majority of mankind hate to grow old. If sin was looked upon with as much shrinking and dread as is the idea of growing old, there would speedily be a great reformation in the world. This is a bad state of affairs, an evidence, in fact, that we are looking through the wrong end of the glass. If we had a journey to make, at the end of which there was a delightful country, more beautiful than anything the imagination could picture, where all that heart could desire should be ours, the one nearest his journey's end would not be looked upon as the most unfortunate. Yet this is often the case in life, looking upon one far in advance, we think, because his body is feeble and nearly worn out, he must be unhappy. He would not be so if, having understood the journey, he had taken pains to know and accept the blessings by the way. We confess that, looking upon life as seen now, there is often much excuse for those who think youth the only pleasant season. Stopping to think a moment, we see this is all wrong. Advancement, not retrogression, is the proper watchword in all undertakings. Is the bud more perfect than the flower, or the flower than the fruit? Old age is the ripened fruit of life, and it remains entirely with us to see that it shall be sweet and pleasant to the taste, instead of bitter and disagreeable. One cause for the latter condition we find lies in persons who, having been disappointed themselves, say to their children, "Hey, have a good time while you are young. Old age brings nothing but care and responsibility. Better give a child poison at once than start him out with that idea." Some will say, "Hey, children are so happy, being so innocent. Do let them be children forever." The innocence of childhood is unfortunately the result of ignorance, and can never make character. One who does good because he knows not how to do evil has no more character than the one who does evil because he knows no good. In youth, knowing little, we have small ideas of life, and consequently cannot have a broad and full enjoyment of it. But we might as well remain children if the knowledge we gain with years does not make us wiser and prevent us running off into every by-path we see, getting nearly swamped in somebody else's opinion, and having to retrace our steps. Behaving in this manner, we cannot expect to reach old age without being tired and disgusted with the journey. Having worn out our brains endeavoring to make two parallel lines meet, and our bodies trying to follow them to the impossible point, time has been too short to consider that which is spiritual, and we must be miserable at the thought of entering a life entirely so. As the body becomes feeble, the soul should grow strong and triumphant, for then we know that our feet are just upon the border of the promised land, only waiting till the thin mist which hides it shall be dispersed by the sunlight of God's will. For some years Mr. Joseph Kinsey, the father of Miss Katie, has been an earnest and devoted spiritualist, and his opinions concerning the future life of man are well known in the community where he resides, and among the businessmen of the country with whom he associates. His daughter, however, had not become convinced of the truths of the spiritual philosophy previous to her death. Let us quote her own words on this subject as given through her chosen medium, in a communication to her father some years after her transition to the higher life. "I was not well enough acquainted with spiritualism, dear father, to understand and accept its revealments, nor was it until I myself became a disembodied spirit, and realized that I possessed the power to return and intelligently communicate with my mortal friends, that I cared to investigate its claims, and to profit by the teachings and privileges that spiritualism affords to man. After her departure from the mortal form, Miss Kinsey embraced every opportunity to communicate with her father and other friends, but it was not until December 22, 1878, that she appeared at a circle in South Boston, Mass, and controlled the now well-known banner of light medium, Miss M. T. Schellemer, who was at that time the message medium of the Voice of Angels, a spiritual journal then and now published semi-monthly in Boston, A. and gave the following lengthy communication, which appeared in that journal January 15, 1879: It was in the beautiful summertime that I passed away from earth, but not from the love, the true home affections, of my parents' hearts. Then the birds, the zephyrs, and the flowers made life beautiful and glad, and earth rang with the melody of perfected spring. Now the blasts of winter have appeared, the cold blast and the biting storm. I loved the glad, warm summer, I loved the winter too, with its diadem of glittering ice gems, and its white drapery of snow, covering all unsightly places with a robe of purity, just as the mantle of charity, drawn by the hand of pitying kindness, covers all unsightly blemishes in the lives of those around it. I come with gladness tonight, not weak and worn out with pain, but strong and robust, to bring the stalks of creamy, white Christmas lilies, that breathe only of purity and peace, and to plant them in the hearts of my darling father and mother, with the blessings of all their dear ones who have developed, and are developing the graces of spiritual culture in the higher life. Oh, Father, oh, Mother, life is so beautiful. Here the forces and attributes of the spirit do not ripen at the expense of the external form. Spirit growth is so natural, so in harmony with outward law, that the inner keeps pace with the outer, and both expand together. The student presents no paling cheek, no wasted frame, for knowledge is gained while living in accordance with nature's laws. My spirit is expanding, developing, I am daily gaining strength. My instructors are judicious and kind, and it is so glorious to express with perfected language the true, pure essence of thought that permeates the spirit. By and by we will meet and greet you, oh, so lovingly in our own dear spirit home. Until then we come to you daily, nestling in our sweet, old home, drawing love and sympathy from your souls, bringing peace and affection to crown your spirits. 8 jewels 1, flash a radiance of celestial love toward you tonight from this distant place. 8 gems, polished by the hand of the great lapidary, shine in the crown of light that awaits you above. Footnote 1. Referring to herself and brothers and sisters in the spirit world. A. Yes, sir, addressing Mr. Robert Anderson, the chairman of the Voice of Angels Circle. A. I have returned from spirit life before, but not here. We frequently come. We have manifested tangibly and satisfactorily to our friends at different places. Last summer we did so in an unmistakable manner at the West. A year ago, some of us tried to manifest at Mrs. Boothby's, in Boston. We come as often as we can. Our home is full of harmony and love, and it strengthens our spirits to come, while it consoles our parents to believe that we are with them. My uncle, who passed away many years ago by accident, has gained a great deal of experience and knowledge with my father at the bank, and in other business places, and he blesses father for his faith in spirit ministration, for it is of great assistance to him. The spirit editor too, of the Voice tells me that if I desire at any time to write out my thoughts, or to give expression to my ideas through this medium, Miss Schellemer, he will be pleased to publish them. I thank him, and may avail myself of his kind offer. Should I do so, Father and all my friends will recognize me under the nom de plume of Spirit Violet, as that is the name I shall assume. I love the violets, their sweet perfume sheds an atmosphere of beauty around me, and they breathe of innocence and peace. Footnote 2. L. Judd Pardee, through whose agency the Voice of Angels was established and managed, in connection with D.C. Densmore, the publisher. I know not as I have given all I could wish, but must not trespass longer. I thank you very kindly for receiving me. My name is Katie A. Kinsey. I come from Cincinnati, Ohio. My father is Mr. Joseph Kinsey of that city. The paper containing the above was forwarded according to the Spirit's direction to Cincinnati, and elicited a letter of inquiry from Mr. Joseph Kinsey, of that city, as to how and where the message was first obtained. Dr. D.C. Densmore, the publisher of The Voice of Angels, replied, giving all the facts of the case, as he had received them from the managers of the circle. The following response, received in due time by Dr. Densmore, and which explains itself, was published in The Voice of February 15, 1879, the very paper which contained the first literary production of Spirit Violet, given through the mediumship of Miss Shella Murray. Cincinnati, February 3, 1879. D. C. Densmore, North Weymouth, Mass. Dear Sir, A. I have your valued letter of the 20th ult, in reply to my letter of inquiry for the particulars as to how and through what medium that beautiful message came from Katie A. Kinsey, published in your paper of January 15th. Your very full statement of the facts and circumstances, together with her sweet message of love, affection, and sympathy, which has since been partially corroborated through J. V. Mansfield, at 61 West 42nd Street, New York, leads me to conclude that the message is verily and truly from our darling daughter Katie, who left her mortal form about 19 months ago, aged 20 years. In that message, she brings to my remembrance occurrences in my father's family of nearly 50 years ago, of which she probably never heard in her life. I send you this affirmation as a pleasing duty in sustaining your work for the Voice of Angels. Truly yours, Joseph Kinsey. Shortly after the publication of the message above alluded to, Spirit Violet, Katie Kinsey, appeared to Miss Shellamer for the purpose of writing for the press, and in the capacity of a literary spirit has attended that lady from that time to the present, forming one of her band of spirit intelligences, whose work it is to assist other spirits to communicate to their mortal friends through the message department of the Banner of Light, to instruct the denizens of Earth concerning their duties to each other, and the best manner of preparing for their future life, and also to inform them of the condition, surroundings, and existence of spirits. Spirit Violet subsequently contributed regularly to the columns of the Voice of Angels, and it is from what she thus furnished to mortals from time to time concerning the real existence and experiences of spirits that we have selected the larger part of the contents of this book. In a private letter written to her father some time since, the spirit thus explains how she happened to learn and avail herself of the mediumship of Miss Shella Murray. When I learned that it was possible for spirits to take possession of certain sensitives on Earth, and through the organisms thus provided, manifest their love and sympathy to their earthly friends, my great anxiety to reach you and mother led me to eagerly seek for a medium adapted to my purpose, and I availed myself of every opportunity to express myself to you and others. I remembered that you were strongly interested in the message department of the Banner of Light, and that you held a high opinion of the abilities of the medium who presided over it. So I expressed my desire to visit the Banner Circle to my spirit brother John, who promised to accompany me there at an early date. But upon presenting myself at that circle I was disappointed to find that it was utterly impossible for me to control, or to influence in any manner, the medium whom I found there. Her magnetism did not in any degree assimilate with my own, and though I visited her circles many times, and watched the ease with which other spirits possessed themselves of her organism, yet I was never able to perform a like operation. At those circles, however, I met the spirit Reverend John Pierpont, a frequenter of that place, who noticed my anxiety, and at length questioned me upon it. To him I related my troubles, and he kindly volunteered to direct me to a medium through whom he thought I could express myself. The spirit further stated that the lady to whom he referred was under the charge of a band of spirits of which himself and Mrs. Conant were members, who were developing her powers that they might be utilized by the spirit world upon the Banner of Light platform, as the lady who then presided at that office would soon be unable to attend to her duties.